All right, good afternoon, everyone. Just while the handouts are going out, so on behalf of the shul, I apologize for the thermostat. We have two settings on the thermostat in the shul. It's either hot or it's cold. The good news is we're building. If you'd like to dedicate the HVAC system, we absolutely have the opportunities available. So I really want to thank Chaya for inviting me to share with you a few words today. And I'm sure just looking at the schedule that it looks like an incredibly profound and impactful program. And it's very exciting for our community that this new service is going to be offered by Gilchrist. And we're excited for what it's going to do for our community members. And we're very excited, I think, for the incredible chesed opportunities that it opens up for the members of our community as well. You know, we often know that Chazal call the burial of the dead chesed shel emes, the ultimate chesed that one could do. Because as we know, whenever you perform a kindness for someone, it's never fully altruistic. Because there's always the possibility of reciprocity. If I do something nice for you, as much as I'd like to think that I'm doing it for purely selfless motivations, at the end of the day, we always have in the back of our mind that one day I may be in need as well. And therefore, again, I do good for others so that should I be in need, others will do good for me. But the rabbis explain, Chazal tell us that the kindness we do for the dead ultimately is a selfless act because there is no possibility of reciprocity. It's a selfless chesed. But I think also the period of time when a person often hovers between life and death, the period of time where a person realizes that the first part of the journey in this world is coming to an end, and the next part of the journey, the eternal part of the journey, is about to begin, also represents incredible opportunities. But I want to take a step back and kind of look at this topic or look at this stage of life through a biblical lens. If you take a look, I figure you've heard a lot of lectures today, so I don't just want to speak to you for the couple of minutes that I have, but I'd like to learn with you a little bit. So take a look at number one. So the pasuk in Bereishis says, "Vayitzav Hashem Elokim ala Adam leimor, mikol ha'itz agan achol tochel." So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Adam and Chava, look, I've created a beautiful world for you, and it's here for you to enjoy. All the trees are here for you. All the fruit is here for you. Whatever you would like, you are permitted to partake of. With one caveat, "Umeitz hadas atol bara lo sochal mimenu ki bayom achalcha mimenu mos tamus." Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "I have one request. Really, not really a request, but one command. You could eat from any tree you want, except from the tree Eitz hadas atol bara, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat, for when you partake of the fruit of that tree, most tamus, you will die." So the way most of us understand this Genesis narrative is that in the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, death was not a part of the world. Meaning, had Adam and Chava not partaken of the forbidden fruit, then people would have lived forever. But comes along the Ramban and many other Mefarshim on the Chumash and say that is unequivocally false. Death was always part of the plan. Death was always part of the fabric of the human condition. The difference is, in fact, we know the Medrash says, some of us recite this phrase on Kiddush, "Vayar Elokim es kol asher asah, v'hine tov ma'ot." At the end of creation, throughout creation, it always says that God saw what he created, and it was good. At the end of creation, it says God saw what he created, and it was tov ma'ot, it was very good. And the Medrash writes, what does it mean that it was tov ma'ot? The Medrash says something astounding. The Medrash writes two words, "Zehu hamaves." This is death. What does it mean when God saw that everything was very good? Very good. This refers to death. How could very good refer to death? So the Ramban and others explain that death was always part of the plan of creation. The difference is that before Adam and Chava sinned, people were going to live long lives and die natural deaths. What Adam and Chava introduced into this world through their sin was the notion of what we call premature or tragic death. Man was never supposed to live forever. And this is an incredibly important part. The Ribono Shel Olam gave us an incredible blessing, perhaps the greatest blessing, and it's called mortality. In fact, even if you look at number two, virtually every time we have to attend a levaya, a funeral, so this pasuk from Yeshayahu, from Isaiah, is always quoted. We say, "Bila hamaves la netzach." He has concealed death. It literally means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will swallow up death forever. "Umocha Hashem Elokim dima me'al kapanim," and God will wipe the tears off every face. So we often assume that what the Navi Yeshayahu is saying is that when Mashiach comes, this is a reference to the Messianic era, when Mashiach comes, death will be swallowed up, there'll be no more death. But in fact, if you look at the Radak in number 3, the Radak says, Bila Hamaves, Yashchis V'Yivatel Hamaves. Yes, when Mashiach comes, he will erase death. But what kind of death? Rotzalomar, Misa Mikris, Lo Misa Tivis. God will go ahead and erase death, but the Radak's formulation is very interesting. He makes a distinction between Misa Mikris. How would you define that? Misa Mikris? Sounds like, right, a sudden happenstance death, like mikra. Mikra means like something that you're like, we say about Amalek, Asher Karcha Baderach, just happened upon. Misa Mikris means essentially unnatural death, versus Misa Tivis, which means natural death. Rotzalomar. So what's an example of Misa Mikris? Rotzalomar. Ha'ariga shahayu hargim osam hagoyim begolos. As tibatel osa misa vadim shaisak upon him. When Mashiach comes, you know what's going to happen? So tragic death is going to be erased. So death at the hands of our enemies is no longer going to occur. Death through terrorism, death through all the barbaric deaths. And this is so fitting that we're learning this in these days right before Tisha B'Av, because again, in just a few days, we're going to mourn 2,000 years of tragic death at the hands of others. Says the Radak, what the Navi Yeshayahu is saying is that when Mashiach comes, that type of death will cease. What he calls Misa Mikris. But Misa Tivis, natural death, will occur even when Mashiach comes. Which fits in line, by the way. You know, there are many machloks in many disputes in terms of what the Messianic era looks like. But if one adopts the Maimonian model, when Mashiach comes, most of life will remain intact as it is now. The difference is that there'll be a global recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the nations of the world will accept the Jewish people's sovereignty and right to the land of Israel. Now those two things by themselves are pretty dramatic, even if nothing else changes. Those two things are quite dramatic. But according to the Rabbah and many others, Olam Kimin Hagonoig, the world will simply go on in a natural fashion in the Messianic era, much in the way it does now. The Radak introduces, there's another important distinction. When Mashiach comes, we're not going to become immortal. When Mashiach comes, we're still going to die. The difference is, when Mashiach comes, there'll be Misa Tivis, natural death, velo Misa Mikris. And that's what we call unnatural happenstance, or perhaps for our purposes, tragic death. So, yes. That sounds like from the Radak is that those things will still be here as well. The Rambam seems to indicate that those things will be here as well. But again, Messianic era is above my pay grade. I don't. We'll know it when it comes. But again, all of these issues are subject to incredible disputes. Well, like the Rambam says, we'll know it when it happens. So the reason I'm sharing this with you is because it teaches us an important lesson that mortality was always part of the divine plan. Why? And I know this is going to sound like a strange statement. There is no greater gift than mortality. Imagine for a moment if we were all immortal. First of all, imagine what your garage would look like if you were immortal, right? So you know how many things we kick down, how many cans we kick down the road, so imagine for a moment if you could say, you know what, it's not a big deal. I didn't get to that last century, no problem. I'll just get to that next century. HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood that the nature of man is to postpone and to delay and to procrastinate. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu did something magnificent for us. He said there's an expiration date. If we're blessed with 120 years, what a bracha. But 120 years in the continuum of mankind is like a blip on the radar. But now, I'll take questions at the end. But now that I realize, at the end of the day, that life is a finite, non-renewable resource, then suddenly I have to take advantage of every single moment. Suddenly I realize that every moment is precious. Suddenly I realize that there's no, you know, people have this phrase, and I think, you know, they said, Rav Pam, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas. He said, you know what the worst word in the English language is? Worst word. Don't worry, I'm not gonna. Right? He says, worst word is whatchamacallit. That's what Rav Pam said. So Rav Pam came from the approach because how could a person open their mouth to speak if you don't know what it is that you're going to say? If you don't know the words you want to use, then a person should refrain from speaking. I think the worst phrase in the English language is the phrase killing time. People have this notion of killing time. I'm waiting for something to occur. I really want it to occur, so I'm going to kill the time. The Jew doesn't have the luxury of killing time, because I recognize that time is a finite, non-renewable resource. You know, the amazing part is you can make more money. You can make more stuff. The one thing you can't make more of is time. And that is the ultimate chesed. So I know it sounds strange a little bit to say that mortality is a chesed, but it is. Because by giving us mortality, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created within us a fire to accomplish, a fire to do, a fire to ultimately maximize every single moment. It is a beautiful statement of the Arizal. The Arizal says, he asks, why is it that people cry at simchas? Right, you see this all the time. Baruch Hashem, I have one of the highlights of my life is always when I get to stand under a chuppah with a new couple as they're beginning their, you know, just the sapling of a new home. And there's not one wedding where someone's not crying. So again, you know, different families have different emotional makeups. Sometimes it's the mother, sometimes it's the father, sometimes it's the grandparents, sometimes it's everyone. But somebody's always crying. So the Arizal says something amazing. He says, why is it that crying is the emotional response to simcha, to happiness? It sounds so strange. Crying is the emotional reaction ultimately to sadness. Crying, tears, are the emotional reaction to tragedy. Why is it that crying is also the same emotional reaction to simcha? And by the way, you know, if you're just a little happy, you don't cry. And I'm talking to a room of women, I'm sorry, right? And if you're just, right, generally, right. So generally, the more acute the simcha, the more intense the tears. Why is that, says the Arizal? Such a strange reaction. And he gives an amazing answer. He says, because deep down the neshama knows that I can't hold on to those moments of simcha. Deep down the soul knows that as happy as I am right now, in a matter of minutes, this moment is going to be over. And I don't know what life holds ahead of me. I don't know what's going to be. I don't know what's going to happen. I'd like to think that everything's going to be wonderful. Everything's going to be happy. But at the end of the day, I don't really know what life has ahead. And so there, a person has such a strong desire, says the Arizal, to hold on to those moments of simcha, but yet I can't. Right? I can't. I could try to maximize them, but I can't hold on to them. And that's why the neshama responds to that reality ultimately by crying. And therefore it turns out that death is an inevitable reality. We can't change it. We can't change it. But our job is to make the process more manageable. When I say our job, that's true for everyone. Meaning it doesn't make a difference if you're a healthcare professional, you're a volunteer. All of us deal with death in different ways, whether it's in a professional setting or whether it's with family or whether it's with friends. If we can't conquer death, which we can't and we're not supposed to, ultimately our job is to try to figure out how to make the process a bit more manageable. So how do we accomplish making the dynamic of death more manageable? So I want to share with you a couple of ideas. If you take a look at number 4, there's an amazing Gemara in Maseches Ksuvos. The Gemara says, Hahu Yoma Dinach Nafshe Derebi. The Gemara tells an amazing story. It was the day that Rebbe, now remember, Rebbe is Rabbi Huda Hanasi, the codifier of the Mishnah. So it was the day that Rebbe died, the day that we know that Rebbe ultimately died. Gazu Rabbanan Ta'anisa Ubo Rachame. The rabbis declared a fast day, and they were davening. So the rabbis were storming the heavens. So you'll see the image in just a moment. Va'amri, Koman da Amar Nach Nafshe Derebi Yidakar Becherev. Now they made a little bit of a hyperbolic statement and they said, whoever says that Rebbe died ultimately should be plunged with a sword. In other words, what they were saying is, don't tell us any news. We have to storm the heavens. We have to try to figure out how to keep Rebbe with us in this world. So listen to this story. Salika Amse Derebi Leigra. So Rebbe's maidservant, now at this point in time, it's important to know, Rebbe's wife had passed away, and his primary caregiver was actually the maid, was the housekeeper. Now, the Gemara tells many stories about Rebbe's housekeeper, who apparently was an exceptionally pious woman. Many stories, and not only just a pious woman, but an exceptionally knowledgeable woman. So what happened? She went up, Igra literally means to the upper story. This is where Rebbe was. Umrosh, so she said, El yonim mevakshines Rebbe, in the celestial sphere, the heavens want Rebbe. What does it mean, the heavens want Rebbe? He was dying. He was dying. It was clear that he was hovering between life and death. So it's clear that the heavens are trying to pull Rebbe towards them. And what happens? V'atachtonim mevakshnes Rebbe. But here's the problem. It's a tug of war. But in this world, they also want Rebbe. The students are davening. The students are praying. The students are supplicating. So there's a tug of war for the soul of Rebbe. The celestial seer wants to pull Rebbe up to them. And ultimately, but yet the residents of this earth are not willing to let go. So what does she do? She says a prayer. Yiratzon sheikofu tachtonim esalyonim. She says, I hope that there's enough power in this world to overcome the divine will. I hope, may it be your will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the residents of this world should go ahead and overcome the divine will. In other words, so she prayed that Rebbe should stay alive. Listen to this. Kevan techazoi, kevan techazoi, kama zimni da'ayil lebeis hakisei. Rebbe suffered from a severe intestinal illness. Whatever, I don't know what the exact nature of the illness was, but he suffered from a debilitating, fatal intestinal illness. So she saw that he was suffering. She saw that he was in pain. He was in agony. In fact, here the Gemara describes he was constantly going back and forth to the bathroom. And every single time he had to go to the bathroom, maybe he had to take off his tefillin. And again, it's not just that she sees inconvenience. She sees profound pain and suffering. When she sees the amount of pain and suffering that Rebbe is experiencing, Amra, she said, Yiratzon sheyakufu al yonim es tachtonim. So this is a mind-blowing Gemara. She sees Rebbe suffering, and she reverses her prayer. Just a moment ago, what did she daven for? That Rebbe should stay alive. Just a moment ago, she davened that Rebbe, the tachtonim, ultimately the residents of this world, their will should overcome the elyonim, the celestial will, God's will. Rebbe, we want you in this world. She sees his suffering, his ribono shel olam. I'm praying for Rebbe's death. It should be your will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that your will should overcome the will of those down here. So what happens? V'lo havi shaski rabbanan miliboy rachami. But this is amazing. What was the problem? She saw that what Rebbe's soul was being tethered to this world. You know, sometimes when you see people in their final stages in life, so you see, sometimes you could see on a person's face that they're actively struggling, they're holding on. That's why sometimes the greatest chesed that family and friends could do for a loved one is to tell them that it's okay to let go. She sees that Rebbe is holding on. So what happens? But why is he being tethered here? He's being tethered because there's incessant prayer. Because the rabbinic, his rabbinic colleagues and the other rabbanim are not stopping to daven. So it's an interesting insight into the power of prayer. But she sees that the prayers are so intense that literally, again, Rebbe's soul cannot leave his body. So look what she does. Shakal kuza, she took an earthenware jug. Shajya me'igra le'ara, she threw it down from the roof onto the ground. And in that moment, when the earthenware jug hit the ground, it shattered. That noise was startling. In that moment, ishtiku me'rachame. In that moment, when they were startled, everyone stopped davening. And what happened? V'noch nafshe de Rebbe. Rebbe passed away in that moment. Now, this is a very profound Gemara on a variety of different levels. First of all, from a theological perspective, we learn the idea that it is permitted under certain circumstances to daven for someone to pass away. Meaning, again, now one has to be very careful with this, because in Judaism, we always live with almost like a little bit of a conflicting dialectic. On one hand, you know, there's a beautiful Gemara, Maseches Brachos. The Gemara says that Chizkiyahu Hanavi, the great king, not Chizkiyahu Hanavi, I'm sorry, King Chizkiyahu was on his deathbed. Now the Talmud tells us Chizkiyahu was one of the most righteous Davidic kings. In fact, the rabbis explain that he had the capacity to be Mashiach. So what happens? He's on his deathbed. So the prophet Yeshayahu, Isaiah, comes to be Mevakir Chola, comes to visit the sick. And Yeshayahu says, Chizkiyahu, you're going to die. Now, don't do that, right? Not a good way to be Mevaker Chola. There's an etiquette for how you visit the sick, and Yeshayahu was in breach of it. We'll see why. But Yeshayahu says, Chizkiyahu, you're going to die. So Chizkiyahu says, why am I going to die? I lived a virtuous life. So interestingly enough, Yeshayahu says, because you never married and tried to have a family. Chizkiyahu purposely never married and never had children. Why? Because he saw in prophecy that if he were to marry and have a son, his son would be exceptionally wicked. Therefore, he made a conscious decision to never marry, never to have children. So Yeshayahu says, God's punishing you. You never attempted. Therefore, again, you're going to die. So Chizkiyahu says to Yeshayahu had a single daughter. So Chizkiyahu says, no, let me marry your daughter. To which Yeshayahu says, sorry, too late. So Chizkiyahu says something amazing. Chizkiyahu says, you know, we have a mesorah, we have a tradition in our family. Even if there's a sharp sword against a person's neck, you never stop seeking divine compassion. God could do anything. God could do anything. And God could do anything in a variety of different ways. In fact, Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kuch, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was giving a lecture when Shaarei Tzedek Hospital first opened its doors. So Rav Kuch was giving a lecture to the new doctors. And he said to the doctors, you are never permitted to tell a patient that there's no hope. So Rav Kuch said, so you would have expected Rav Kuch to say, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do anything and everything. But that's not what he said. Rav Kuch said, because modern science is advancing every single day. And what looks incurable today will become, in fact, I'm sure many of you saw this. I was amazed by this. On Erev Shabbos, remember, was Rosh Chodesh Av. The headline on the Jerusalem Post, I checked it right before Shabbos, was that researchers in Israel have just begun to work on a potential cure for ALS. For Lou Gehrig's. Stem cell research, they already tested it. They've tested it in human patients. They've begun to see incredible and dramatic cell repairing results. Absolutely amazing. I thought to myself, how amazing is this world? That on Rosh Chodesh Av, Mishenich Nasav, Mema'atin B'Simcha, when the month of Av comes, we diminish our displays of joy, and yet here's such an incredible potential breakthrough. Kadosh Baruch Hu works in multiple ways. Sometimes God works through science, and sometimes God works just through God. Just God could do anything He wants. So what we see is, on one hand, we recognize that Kadosh Baruch Hu could do anything. On the other hand, we also know there's a concept of Olam Kiminhago Nohe, which means the world works in a general normative fashion. So if someone, God forbid, has an incurable disease, we have to plan for the possibility that they're not going to recover from that. So this is the amazing dialectic of Judaism. We hold out for miracles until the very last moment, but we're very realistic in our approach to circumstances as well. From this Gemara we learn, on a theological perspective, that yes, under certain circumstances, you can daven for someone to be released from the shackles of life, because sometimes life is no longer a blessing. Sometimes life becomes a sentence for someone who is terminally ill. And as much as we believe in life at all costs, we don't believe in life at all costs. We'll discuss that. We believe life is of incredible importance. But sometimes when a person has done what they need to do in this world, the greatest chesed you can do for them is to release them. Because the beautiful part is we believe that this world is a prozdor. We believe that this world is an antechamber. It's a hallway. We believe that when our loved ones or when our patients go on to somewhere else, they're not just going to some black abyss, but ultimately, again, they're going to the Olam Ha'emes. They're going to the beautiful afterlife. We don't encourage, we don't hasten death. But what we see from this Gemara is that we have the ability under certain circumstances ultimately, again, to daven for someone to be released from the shackles of life. So really, number one is we can make death more manageable through tefillah. And that tefillah goes both ways. We daven for refuah shalema, but sometimes you just stop davening for refuah shalema. At a certain point in time, we daven for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make the person comfortable. And whatever that comfort means, sometimes, halavai, we never stop wanting for recovery, because we are students of Chizkiyahu HaNavi. By the way, the postscript to the Chizkiyahu story was, Chizkiyahu does marry Yeshayahu's daughter, and they have a son. His name was Menashe. Menashe was the longest reigning king and was one of the most evil kings the Jewish people ever had. He ruled for 55 years, was a Rasha, was exceptionally evil for 33 of them, did tshuva for the last 22 of them, but had introduced so much idolatry into the land that it was impossible to dial it back. So Chizkiyahu was right. but he was wrong. That's a different topic about how involved we are supposed to get in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbonos. God, like, we leave it to God to run the world. We have to do our thing. In any event, what we see ultimately is we have this incredible dialectic, and that dialectic is expressed through tefillah. We daven for refuah shelema, we ultimately daven for people's recovery, but we also daven when life becomes too unbearable. We daven ultimately again that the person should have relief. Another important idea, and again, I'm talking about these things obviously on a very broad level. The actual applications of these concepts are much more intricate and complicated. But from a healing perspective, this is a very important idea. People often assume that Judaism dictates that you do anything and everything to prolong life. That statement is not correct. Judaism believes that life should be prolonged under certain circumstances. And again, I'm not even going to get into the technicalities of that, because that is something ultimately, again, if you're a healthcare provider, or ultimately if you're dealing with this in your family, that you should ask your Rav about, because these issues are exceptionally complicated. But I want to tell you how often people get confused with what Judaic mandate or what Judaic policy is, and think that the goal is to keep a person alive at all times. If someone is terminally ill and they are not going to recover according to the natural laws of the world, no, you don't automatically have to put in a feeding tube, and you don't automatically have to put a person on a respirator. Again, these are questions that have to be asked, and there is no one answer for every single situation. But you see, again, because if it was life at all costs, then what right would Rebbe's maidservant, what right would the housekeeper have had to ultimately intervene in the process and cause Rebbe to be taken from this world? And by the way, I'm not just going to, this Gemara is quoted in many halachic sources as being authoritative on multiple levels. So yes, life is sacrosanct. You know, Rav Shamshon Hirsch points out that interesting thing in Judaism is, if you notice, if you ever drive by a church, what do you see attached to virtually every church? A cemetery. Yet, if you drive by shuls, you never find cemeteries. The only place you find cemeteries often attached to shuls is if you visit shuls back in Europe. And the reason for that was for a totally different reason, because Jews were often precluded from owning land. So often, again, if you were able to own a piece of land, you had to consolidate everything there. Rav Hirsch says it's interesting. Why don't we put our cemeteries next to shuls? I mean, if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. Right? Why don't we put our shuls next to cemeteries? And Rav Hirsch says, because we are a religion that values life. Right? When we come to shul for life-affirming activity. That's why we don't really speak all that much about death. We don't pine for death. Other religions have this grandiose vision of what death is. They're running to death. Let's get to death. Let's expedite death. We are a life-affirming religion. We believe that the greatest gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us is life. Yes, we recognize that death is an inevitable reality. We recognize that death is something that one day we will all have to contend with, halavai after 120, but we're not looking to expedite the process. And in fact, again, whatever we could squeeze out of life, we will. But that does not automatically equal, therefore prolong life with any means at your disposal. And this is exceptionally necessary. Let me introduce one more piece. If you look at number 5, so again, first two lessons is we make death manageable, more manageable through tefillah, and we must put in the effort to heal, but also know when to stop. Number 5, the Gemara Maseches Brachos. This is a beautiful Gemara. Rabbi Elazar Chalash, this is actually an important Gemara in general for Bikur Cholin. Rabbi Elazar Chalash, Rabbi Elazar became ill. Al Ligabe Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan went to visit him. Chaza de Havagane Bebayis Afel. So this is actually an amazing Gemara. So Rabbi Elazar walks in and he sees that Rabbi Elazar was bedridden. Rabbi Yochanan walks in and he sees that Rabbi Elazar is ill and he's bedridden. He also saw the house was dark. The house was just dark. Galye ledare v'nafal nahora. So this is actually an amazing Gemara. Rabbi Elazar rolled up his sleeve and light, the room was illuminated. So what does that mean? So Rashi's approach in number 6 is that Rabbi Yochanan was known as the Shufri Yerushalayim, one of the most handsome men in Jerusalem. And as such, again, it appears that his skin was almost luminescent. So he rolled up his sleeve, and what happened? It illuminated the entire room. So there's a beautiful approach. I actually was at a Levaya last week. Rabbi Kostelitz quoted this idea. There's a beautiful idea brought down by the Chibin Rav. And the Chibin Rav says, are we to take this Gemara literally? Does it literally mean that his skin was so luminescent that he walked into the room and it lit up the room? So what's the answer? Yeah, I mean, it's possible that it's literal. Here's my feeling with this. If you believe that God created the world in 6 days, right, whatever that means, and you believe that he split the sea, somebody walking into a room and illuminating the room with their luminescent skin is not such a great miracle. But okay, you could take it literally. The Chibin Rav says, but maybe there's a simpler understanding of it. Maybe what it means is the following. That Rabbi Elazar was sick, he was bedridden, and Rabbi Yochanan walks in, and what does he see? He sees a darkened room. He sees a house in disrepair. He sees a person who is neglected and no one is caring for him. So what does Rabbi Yochanan do? Gale lidare means what? He rolled up his sleeves. He rolled up his sleeves. And what did he do? He cleaned up the house. Maybe he made a hot meal. He pulled up the blinds. He let some light into the room. You know, sometimes when we come to the aid of another, so we have our whole script prepared, right? We have our whole script prepared. No, who's your doctor, right? Who's your doctor? How's the food, right? Oh, you're so lucky you're in here. It's so hot out there, right? All the crazy kind of things that people say when being mevaker chola, right? But what's the idea ultimately, again, if you have the privilege to be by the bedside of someone who is compromised in some way, the greatest zechus, the greatest privilege you have is roll up your sleeves and help. When you go in and you're standing by someone's bedside, the first thing to do is look around and ask yourself, what can I do for the person? Because sometimes you'll ask a person who's ill or ask a person who's compromised, what could I do for you? And often the answer you'll get is nothing. And that nothing, by the way, comes for a variety of reasons. Well, sometimes, Baruch Hashem, the nothing comes about because a person maybe has a very supportive and intact family unit, and maybe they really don't need anything. More often than not, the nothing comes about because a person doesn't want to impose upon others. I don't want to put on you, or I'm embarrassed to ask, or I'm embarrassed that I'm even in this situation that I have to be on the receiving end. My whole life I was a giver, and now I want to be. These people are so complicated. Therefore, again, the Gemara is teaching us that when you walk into a situation, the first thing you need to do is size it up, is look around, and if the room is dark, lift up the blinds, both literally as well as figuratively, that if there are things in active states of disrepair, roll up your sleeves and see what can be done in order to address the situation. How do we make the process of dying a little bit more manageable? By walking into those situations and asking ourselves, what can I do to help that individual? But I want to end off, because I know my time is up, I want to end off with one last piece. And I think this last piece is something that resonates with incredible importance, especially given the fact that kind of the foundation stone of this gathering today is hospice. You know, the Maharal says something amazing. The Maharal says that the sicker a person gets, the more spiritual they become. Now, the Maharal explains this in a very dramatic way. The Maharal says, throughout life, we each have a constant tension. And that's a tension between body and soul. My body wants to do one thing. My body wants to enjoy this world. My body wants to take advantage of the pleasures and the desires of this world. My soul wants to be something bigger and holier. So that's a constant battle. That battle is waged from the moment we walk into this world, and it doesn't stop until we leave this world. That's why, again, the Mishnah of us says, Al tamin ba'atzmacha ad yom osecha. Don't believe in yourself until the day that you die. Why? Now, that sounds like a little bit of a downer, but what it's saying is there's that tension. Don't believe you've ever vanquished the desires or the wants of the body because they're strong. When you're dead, you know that you're done. But until that point in time, that battle is always there. But the Maharal says something amazing. The Maharal says when a person is ill, so the physicality is suppressed. Physicality is suppressed. And it's almost like there's like the seesaw. Whenever one is weaker, the other force is stronger. If physicality is suppressed and compromised, that means the soul is more dominant and stronger. That's why, says the Maharal, it is common to always see that people who are sick and people who are ill are much more introspective, much more contemplative, and in many respects, much more spiritual. And I want to be clear, it's not always that way. Sometimes when a person is ill, a person just requires all of their reserves just to keep their head above water. And they don't have room for God, room for spirituality. That definitely happens, but the other side happens as well. That you see people, I'll tell you this from a personal perspective. So I spend a lot of time with people who are dying. And it always is remarkable to me how someone who you can know for years says something so profound and so spiritual, and you say to yourself, wow, I've known that guy for years, and he's never said something deep, meaningful, purposeful, or even that relevant. And now suddenly again, this individual is saying all kinds of things, and you wonder, where does it come from? And it comes from an unsuppressed soul. It comes ultimately again from a heightened spirituality. And the reason I'm sharing this with you is because when people are at the end of their journey of life, and they realize they're at the end of the journey of life, you hear all kinds of things. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard people express remorse and regret about the lives that they've led, about the things they wanted to do and they never were able to. And you know, when you hear that, it's heartbreaking. Because what are you going to say? It's okay. Or what are you going to say? It's okay, you know, you'll do it tomorrow. There might not be a tomorrow. There are some times when people say things and they reflect on their lives and there are things that they've done that they cannot reverse. Or there are things they wanted to do, but at the end of the day, they will never get to do. So besides the fact that I would tell all of you that whether you're engaging in this work on a professional level or on a volunteer level, understand that when you hear that, use those moments for personal growth. Because those are some of the greatest moments of Musr, when you realize that life does come to an end and people do leave this world with incredible regrets and incredible feelings of emptiness and voids. Use that as a catalyst to live more and to be better. But on a deeper level, what you have to realize is that if you're there for a person in their final hours, in their final days or their final hours, you have an incredible opportunity to give them chizuk. You have an incredible opportunity to give them strength. You may not be able to say, well, you really did this, you really did that, because like we said before, sometimes people just didn't accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. But if you're there in those moments, you have an opportunity to give them chizuk, to give them strength. Help them try to focus on the things they did accomplish. And if you don't know the person, steer the conversation. So tell me, I know you're upset that you didn't get to do A, B, C, and D, but tell me a little bit about yourself. What did you accomplish? When you look back at your life, tell me some of the beautiful moments. And if you help redirect a person's thought process to the things they did do, to the things they did accomplish, you do such an incredible chesed. You know, the Medrash writes that Yaakov Avinu davened for illness. I know this sounds strange. Yaakov Avinu davened for illness. Patriarch Jacob davened for illness. Why would he daven for illness? Because again, the Medrash explains that before Yaakov, how would people die? They would sneeze, the Medrash writes. They would sneeze, and literally again, just like God, Bresha says, God breathed life into the nostrils of man. Ultimately, when a person died, the soul would just come out. That's why, again, in certain communities, the custom is actually to say l'chaim when someone sneezes. So Yaakov Avinu davened for illness. Why? Because when a person gets ill, Yaakov Avinu understood that a person could see the end is near. And when a person sees the end is near, it's an opportunity to get my affairs in order. It's an opportunity to go ahead and try to right the things that are wrong or to try to do the things that I didn't have a chance to do. So sometimes, even if the person can't do that, if you're by the bedside in those final moments, the chizuk and the strength and the unconditional love that you could give a person, even who you might not know very well, those moments of happiness and tranquility and belonging that you could give to someone as their soul transitions from this world to the next, that's a chesed shel emes. You know, I began speaking about chesed shel emes. Everyone thinks that the ultimate act of chesed is burying the dead because they can't repay you. I would suggest that the ultimate act of chesed is helping a person transition from this world to the next. Because what you allow a person to do is to close out this journey of life and feel confident and comfortable beginning the next. So even though we can't go ahead and conquer death, and it's not our job to conquer death, hopefully what we can understand is that A, death, when understood correctly, is the greatest bracha HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. But God has given us the tools and God has given us the abilities to help make it a bit more manageable. We make it manageable through our tefillos. We make it manageable by realizing that we don't sustain life at all costs. We make it manageable by understanding that it's our job to figure out what does the other person need. And we make it more manageable by being there for others in their most vulnerable moments, which are often their last moments in this world. So I hope that Amirat Hashem and the merit of coming together for such a beautiful event, such a meaningful event, and really marking, hopefully, what is going to be a magnificent resource and service for our community. And I want to give all of you an incredible yashar koach, because, again, I don't know if most of you are here are health professionals or if you're just here as volunteers, but whatever capacity you're here in, first of all, an incredible yashar koach for coming out, for spending your day focusing on this important avodah. And I wish you all incredible hatzlach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you each the incredible siyata d'shmaya, divine providence, to be able to not just to be there for others in their time of need, but to know how to be there for others in their time of need. And in the merit of all the beautiful chassad and acts of kindness that all of you are going to do, and in the merit of this beautiful gathering of chassad happening during the 9 days, halavai we should be zocha, bila hamaves la netzach. We know ultimately, again, that death as a whole will never totally disappear, but we look forward to the day when tragic death will disappear. We look forward to the day, ultimately, again, when death will be a natural and harmonious passage from this world to the next. But until that day, we pledge ourselves to do whatever we can to make everyone's difficult circumstances just a bit easier. Thank you.
Can I get a copy of that recording? How do we get that? Is that a fire or?